I'd like to start today with a question. What's the most memorable experience you've ever had while in a cloud? What happened? Well, for me, I was about 12. I was in a car, and my dad, brother, uncle, and I were in Rocky Mountain National Park, and we were heading up Trail Ridge Road. Trail Ridge Road is a mountain road. It starts about 9,000 feet up, and then goes up and up and up the side of a mountain. At 12,183 feet, it turns, flattens out, and heads back down the other side. The road is narrow, a single lane on each side, and like many Colorado mountain roads, there isn't much of a shoulder between the road and the edge below. So there we were, heading up the road, and it wasn't too long before we were in a cloud. Now, at first, it resembled fog. The air was misty and light, and we could still see. But then the fog got thicker and thicker and thicker. Even before we got to the timberline, the point on a mountain where trees can no longer grow, the trees and bushes along the edge of the road simply disappeared. The high wooden poles that are used to tell the snow plows where the edge of the road is during springtime vanished. We couldn't see the edge. We couldn't really see the road. And I remember looking out the window, straining my eyes with all my strength, trying to see something, anything that was out there. But I couldn't. Everything, including the edge, was gone. Now, I knew the edge was out there. I knew if we weren't careful, we would end up finding a spot where there was no road. But we kept going up and up and up. And there was nothing to see except this brilliant cloud all around us. And I imagine that's what talking to God in a cloud looks and feels like. And that's what the apostles, I think, experienced in our gospel reading today. They are enveloped by the cloud of God, a cloud that shows up over and over again in the early books of the Bible. This cloud descends onto mountains, leads the people as they march in the wilderness, and lights their way at night. This cloud engulfs Moses when he's on Mount Sinai and given the Ten Commandments. And this cloud also covers Moses when he's in the tabernacle, standing in front of the Ark of the Covenant inside this giant, movable temple designed by God to be a place where the people can talk to God, no matter where they go. It's in this cloud, in this experience, when the teachings in Exodus and Leviticus are given. And it's also in this cloud that comes down to cover the apostles once they finally get confirmation of just who this Jesus is. Now, when Jesus is up on the mountaintop praying and Moses and Elijah come to speak with him, Jesus is lit up. He's transfigured, changed, so that he shines. He's like some cosmic disco ball or maybe a really intense neon sign. And this is the special effects kind of Jesus. A Jesus that would feel at home in a Michael Bay movie, and one who just looks awesome. And there's no one who could see this, see this image of Jesus and not realize that this Jesus is exactly who he says he is. So it's no wonder when Peter sees this, when he experiences this vision, that he wants to grab onto it. He wants to capture it, hold on to what he is seeing. But he doesn't have a camera. There's no iPhone in his pocket to snap the picture, sending the image and experience into another cloud, the cloud of the internet, where it can be posted, shared, and seen. Peter instead tries to capture this truth that he is seeing in the only way he knows how. And so he wants to build a dwelling, a monument, a temple to mark this event and hold what he sees. He wants to capture Jesus as he is, right there, lit up like Times Square. Because in Peter's mind, this is the proof the world needs that Jesus is the Messiah. This is confirmation that Jesus is able to do the impossible. This is evidence that Jesus is like some superhero with nice clothes, special abilities, and the power to make their nation great again by tossing the occupying Roman army into the sea. Peter wants to keep what he sees. And it's then when the cloud descends. It's when Peter praises this Jesus, praises the special effects, the bright lights, the neon signs. It's when Peter says this. And then God moves. Now, the words Peter uses might seem odd, but they're really not. Because in many ways, there are words too. We want this kind of Jesus. We want a Jesus who is easy to see, someone who is powerful, someone who looks like some cosmic silver surfer who will be able to do impossible things. And so when Peter speaks, giving voice to our desire to trap Jesus in what we think God's power, hope, and love actually looks like, that's when the cloud descends. That's when everything is covered up. The disciples are hidden. The sky is blotted out. The trees and bushes and edges that mark the boundary for this mountaintop, that's all gone. They're engulfed, surrounded, and terrified. Peter, James, and John grow silent. Their words stop. So God speaks, saying, "This is my Son. Listen to him." And with those words, the cloud vanishes. Moses and Elijah are gone. Jesus' fancy robes, his changed face, and his disco ball appearance disappears. The disciples find themselves left with this plain and ordinary Jesus they always knew. Now, I imagine that the disciples looked at Jesus differently after this. They probably wondered where those white robes went. But when this special effects kind of Jesus vanishes and only an ordinary Jesus remains, Peter, James, and John don't know what to do. Jesus could be with them like some cartoon action hero, but he's not. Jesus could always wear those fancy clothes, but he doesn't. This Jesus meets them in ordinary ways, in their ordinary lives, turning them so they can live out God's extraordinary love. It's this ordinary Jesus who called each of them by name, brought them together to form a new community and to do new things together. It's this ordinary Jesus who can cast out demons and cure the sick, which is pretty extraordinary, really. But he also ate and drank with them, sharing in their meals and promising to be in their bread and drink. This is a Jesus who can wear the white of angels, but who promises to walk with the disciples wherever they go. And this is a Jesus who is going to walk down that mountain, knowing that his upcoming departure is about to come. He knows his journey, his exodus, is leading him to another mountain just a few chapters from now. And that mountain we call Calvary. After the Transfiguration, after the powwow with Moses and Elijah, after the cloud engulfs the disciples, replacing their vision of God with what God has in mind, we're left with just one thing: Jesus. There's no fireworks, no special effects, no brilliant clothes. Just a Jesus who heads to the only place where he can go now. And that's down, over the edge, into the valley, into the world, and into our lives. Jesus goes down because our mountaintops are few and far between, but our valleys are long, deep, and hard. The Jesus we get isn't the summer blockbuster movie version of the Jesus we want. The Jesus we get is the Jesus we need. A Jesus who lives for us. A Jesus who lives in us, and a Jesus who dies for us. Because that's what the great I Am does. The Jesus we want can't force us to love our neighbor like ourselves. But the Jesus we get in our baptism, in our communion, and in our community changes us so we can. It's on a mountaintop that Jesus is transfigured. But it's only through the cross that Jesus can truly transfigure us. Amen.